Finally, he spied the canvas bag hanging from the spar of a sunken ship lying smack in the middle of the pass. The ship was cracked in two, its broken hull draped over both sides of the reef. Swimming close, Dean grabbed the spar to slow his passage and heard it break apart, then saw the bag plummeting into a hole in the deck, disappearing inside the vessel. Releasing the rotten piece of wood, Dean went lower and lower until locating the bag of munitions. Most of the bottom of the ship was gone, ripped away by the coral. Through the gaping chasm of the hull, the bag had fallen onto a ledge of pink coral, the straps waving in the currents. Making a decision, Dean exhaled early and filled his lungs to the maximum, emptying a bladder. Then, casting away the excess drag of the bamboo spear, he swam using both hands, going straight into the belly of the sunken vessel. Trying not to touch anything, Dean maneuvered around the dim recess of the craft. The pink coral showed through the hull, rising from the shattered planks in spurs and sharp peaks, but the coarse material reflected the dim light from above, giving him just barely enough illumination to traverse the razor-sharp obstacles. However, the water had distorted his estimation of the depth, and his lungs were aching by the time he reached the bag and grabbed it off the ledge. Success! Draping it over a shoulder, he realized how heavy it was when he started to sink. Quickly drawing his knife, he sawed at the leather belt of rocks around his waist to lighten the load. Busy at the task, he didn't notice when he drifted to the stairs and collided with the railing. Small as the contact was, the entire ship groaned loudly and began to break apart. The deck rose as the ceiling fell. Planks splintered, silt clouding the water, and the mast slowly smashed through the hatch like a falling tree. He dodged clumsily, but blackness engulfed him and something painfully glanced off his shoulder. Then the bag was jerked away, dragging him along. Savagely, Dean hacked at the darkness and the munitions bag came free. As the awesome weight of the rotten hull drove the bow into the sand, the wreckage began to pile upward. Frantically swimming for the stairs, Dean dodged a thrust from the shattering railing, went under a rushing bulkhead, and darted into the cargo hold. The destruction slowed slightly as the aft section of the keel stubbornly resisted, and Dean took the opportunity to get his bearings. Floating between decks, he saw there were still tiny pinpoints of light streaming in from above, which meant he was in the shallows of the harbor. But he had to get out fast and without touching anything. Next time, he might not be so fortunate. Lungs aching, Dean went to take another breath from the pig bladder and found it flopping loosely, ripped apart by some slashing piece of wreckage. Instantly, his heart began to pound, and Dean remembered his father telling him a person used more air when he was scared. Stay calm, stretch every breath. Seconds counted now. Christy had told him to always follow the air bubbles, but that was bad advice for this situation. Escape meant going sideways. Rolling on his side, the tiny bubbles trickling along his left cheek, the boy now saw the ship correctly in his mind and headed for the starboard gun ports. A direct access to the outside. If they were in the same place as on the Constellation, everything was fine. If not, Dean banished from his thoughts what would be the result if he was wrong. Swimming quickly, he ignored the moans of the ship, the snaps of its ribs and buckling beams. Concentrating on watching the light and the bubbles, his only compass to freedom. A hatch led up, or was it down? He didn't know. Confusion filled his mind. Then he saw the rising bubbles and moved toward what looked to be deeper into the ship, but had to be the way to the upper deck. So bastard easy to get lost underwater. He couldn't let that happen again, but it was getting hard to think clearly. He desperately needed to breathe, his heart pounding hard, lungs aching for the tiniest sip of air. Closing both eyes, he let the currents haul him upward, always following the course of the bubbles that trickled from his nose. He willed himself to think of good times, to stay calm. He recalled watching vids in a redoubt and his first taste of popcorn, the memory of his mother and the first time he met his dad. That day they spent fishing on the Hudson and didn't get a bite. No muties, no fighting. A peaceful day. Almost boring then, but now it seemed like heaven. His lungs began to burn, and Dean clamped his mouth shut as he went by a hatch, then hastily paddled back and went through. Cannons and broken barrels were scattered about, rope snaking through the darkness as if alive, and a row of open hatches forming a vertical line of sunlight. Kicking away, he felt the sandal hit the hatch, and there came the terrible sound of splintering wood once more. As fast as possible, he headed for the middle hatch and saw the hull of the ship descending from his left, the opening going by to be crushed flat on the sand to his right at a frightening speed. Summoning his last ounce of strength, Dean charged and darted through the last opening, the jam slamming into his legs, a heel catching for a second. Then he was out. Clamping a hand over his mouth, Dean moved away from the disintegrating vessel, then headed for the surface. It was just a matter of time now, only 30 feet to go. But his movements were feeble, his meager resources of stamina gone in his flight from the craft. Worse, the noon tide seemed to be pushing him sideways, and he was much too weak to fight the current. Dean banished a rush of fear from his mind and concentrated on a summer day years ago when it rained hard in Nevada, but not acid rain, and the air smelled so good afterward. The plants blooming like nothing he'd ever seen. And that time Doc found a vacuum-sealed can of chocolate powder in a redoubt, and Mildred made a devil's food cake. It was like bread, but so dark and sweet. The taste filled his mouth. But the searing ache in his lungs was becoming agony. His vision was cloudy, and he exhaled an explosion of bubbles to ease the pain for a split second before the urge seized him to now inhale. His own body was turning against him now, demanding that he breathe, even though it meant death. But anything was better than this terrible suffocation. Sound violently returned as his head cleared the surface and Dean greedily drank in the fresh air.
Better than chocolate cake.
Dean, don't move.
As the fog lifted from his vision, Dean saw his father standing in the dugout canoe, pointing the Steyr directly at him.
What's going on?
There seemed to be water in his ears. Everything was muffled and faint. Waving back, he started that way and felt something large brush by him, raking his side as if with sandpaper.
Ow!
A big dorsal fin cut the surface only yards away.
Hot pipe!
In the dugout, Ryan saw the shark brush past his son on an inspection pass and reacted instantly. Drawing the panga, Ryan slashed his palm and thrust it into the ocean, splashing the water. Doc knew fish and had said a shark could smell fresh blood from a mile away.
Come on, over here!
The shark abruptly shifted direction and charged straight for the canoe. Dropping the knife, Ryan grabbed Doc's stick and pulled out the full yard of Toledo steel. He'd only get one chance at this. When it found no food, the shark would go right back after Dean. Dripping blood into the water, Ryan braced himself for the strike.
Come on, you son of a bitch!
He yanked out his hand as the jaws of the great white reached for the food, its huge body slamming into the canoe, nearly spilling the man. Ryan slashed down with all of his might, and blood exploded from the water as he completely removed the beast's dorsal fin. Surfacing in mindless rage, the shark snapped insanely in an automatic response to pain. Then it tried to turn and attack, but rotated helplessly around and around. Without the stiff dorsal to rudder its swim, the deadly killer was completely out of control. Spiraling away, the shark bucked and thrashed, thin blood pumped from the wound into the clear harbor waters. Turning end over end, beating its tail wildly, the great white wove a random path through the water, its motions gradually slowing until it stopped moving and limply rose to the surface, turning over to expose its pale belly to the bright sunlight. Panting for breath, Ryan pumped a couple of rounds into its guts with a Sig Sauer, just to be sure. From the shore, the locals cheered, then stopped and ran pell-mell toward the Ville gate, dropping their belongings along the beach.
Hey!
Lowering the sword, Ryan helped the boy on board, then removed his jacket to drape over Dean's greasy shoulders.
Are you hurt, son?
Anything else to get?
No, boy. We're leaving now.
Okay by me.
Placing the munitions bag in the stern, alongside the med kit, bedrolls, backpacks, and wire-rimmed glasses, Ryan went to the middle of the canoe, took the single oar, and started paddling toward the trawler.
The warning gong?
Where'd everybody go?
The people were gone from the beach. The gate closed. Glancing quickly around, Ryan saw the other companion standing on the deck of the fishing trawler, then glanced at the waterfall flowing into the lagoon that fed the harbor. The dock was empty, no smoke visible from a fire. Everything seemed fine. Even the sky was clear. Then, from around the point of the island, a squat boat came steaming into view, its deck covered with men and weapons.
Fireblast. We're not gonna make it, son.
Pirates?
Worse. It's the Lord Baron, and he brought the whole bastard fleet.
Out beyond the breakers, the PT boats came steadily around the sandy point and toward the island harbor, thick smoke pouring from their aft funnels, forming a black cloud that lay over the ocean like a death shroud.
9, 10, pipe, that's a lot of ships!
Too many.
Ryan paddled fast. Out in the open, they were easy pickings. They had to reach shore, or they didn't have a chance. Looking straight ahead at the fishing trawler, Ryan saw Christy and the others standing still, watching and waiting. There was nothing else they could do for the moment. Then, the alarm gong from the Ville abruptly stopped, and he realized it was so the incoming boats wouldn't hear. Glancing over a shoulder, Ryan saw the PDs spreading out from a tight formation, some slowing, others heading for the pass in the breakers, the water churning behind them from the spinning props. Damn things might be steam-powered, but they had real speed and were armed to the teeth. He'd seen PT boats many times before, mostly just wrecks on the garage level of waterfront redoubts, but these were in fighting trim. The hulls were shiny with paint, the windshield sparkling clean. Plus, a low wall of sandbags ringed the top deck, offering protection from snipers and shrapnel. They had to weigh a lot, but the additional tonnage didn't seem to affect the speed of the gunboats. Fat black tubes for pre-dark torpedoes rested on either side of the stubby killers, the usual quad 50 caliber assembly removed for a single 50 caliber machine gun. The depth charge racks were gone, replaced with small black powder cannons, and in the middle of the ship was a honeycomb arrangement of short pipes stuffed full of sleek rockets.
Those must be the Firebirds Jones mentioned.
Dean was pulling on his clothes. His skin was raw on the right side of his chest, the rest of his body greasy, and the cloth kept sticking in place and had to be pulled loose again and again. Hopefully, at the next redoubt, there'd be a working shower.
If those were law rockets, one ship would have enough to level the whole Ville.
Look homemade.
Doesn't mean they aren't as deadly as a shitter full of muties.
Five of the boats were staying outside the breakers, while the rest steamed into the harbor. Point advance guard and cover guard. These sailors weren't fools.
Want me to help row?
Hell no. Toss a line over the side. Make it look like we're fishing, not trying to get away.
Yes, sir.
Three of the PDs cut their motors in the middle of the harbor as PT-264 and its escort went straight for the dock. The wind ruffling his hair, Lieutenant Brandon stood in the wheelhouse of PT-264 and studied the harbor. Everything looked peaceful enough. Father and son fishing to the right, couple of windjammer trawlers at the dock, maybe a dozen canoes on the shore. There were a lot of sec men on the brick wall of the Ville, but nobody was waving and the gate was closed. At least the alarm gong wasn't sounding, so there couldn't be anything really wrong.
Look there, sir! At the end of the dock!
Brandon did as his Sergeant Hannigan suggested and frowned. As always, a couple of lanterns were hung at the end of the pier to light the arrival of ships and give them sufficient warning not to crash into the dock. But one was draped with kelp. At night, the light would be a bright green, visible for miles.
Another bastard traitor. Kinnison only wanted the flash, nothing more.
And now, sir?
This is the second time we've been here and found traitors. The children go into chains, and we chill everybody else.
Even the local baron?
Him first.
Yes, sir.
Standing quietly in the hatchway leading to the lower deck, the slave said nothing and turned away so she could smile. Excellent. Let the norms chill one another. The fewer, the better. As soon as the Petis reached shore, she'd dive overboard and swim for the jungle. She knew the formula for black powder, plus a lot of other weapons tech. And when the people faced Norm soldiers again, they'd be on equal footing.
Half reverse! Quarter speed! Full reverse! All stop!
The motors cut, and the Petey drifted into the slip like fingers into a glove. It bumped once against the wag tires edging the wood pylons and stopped as the bow softly crunched against the clean, sandy beach. While the crew attached the mooring lines, Hannigan worked the bolt on his long blaster and Brandon strode across the dock. His clothing was amazingly clean, the white shirt and pants almost spotless and had no patches. The shirt was unbuttoned halfway down, exposing a hairy, muscular chest covered with ritual scars in a graduated delta pattern. A black leather belt was draped loosely across his wide chest in the manner of a bandolier, the loops full of shiny brass cartridges, and a huge revolver jutted from the holster. Tucking his thumbs into the belt, Brandon checked the derringer hidden behind the buckle and bumped his left boot against the sandbags to make sure his stiletto was in place. Fine.
Ahoy, Cold Harborville! Open your gate and bring me Baron Langford at once, by order of the Lord Baron. Last chance.